We are checking back in. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy on Tax Day. Tacky, how are you?
Hey, yeah, no, I don't want to be associated with Tax Day people. This was not my choice in scheduling. Joe gave me a time and I took it. That was my mistake.
I didn't realize it when I did it. I hope it's not a taxing day.
So good to see you. And after like a summer-ish, late fall-ish type day yesterday, we're back to April.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, on a more serious note, today, of course, is the, believe it or not, 12th anniversary of the Marathon bombings.
Yeah, it seems like time flies, right? On these major events in our lives, and sometimes we have more when these influence our generation, right? We have obviously 9/11. Locally, we have the Boston bombing. We had the sh attempted shoe bomber, and of course, I'm just old enough as remind folks during the Cold War, I was alive for Tiananmen Square and the Berlin Wall coming down and watching it, live as you can on television at the time. And yeah, I mean, the Boston bombing is another big moment in a generation of lives that's a big part of our culture and influence. It's sad. For those who may not know, I have a good friend I work with who is the stepfather of Sean Collier, and him and his wife and all the stepkids, and work together to keep his memory alive, including running the Boston Marathon. So normally, I don't pitch charities because I have to do everyone. But in this instance, if you feel like you want to support Sean Collier Fund, it's easy enough to find online, and please consider donating. They've been doing a lot of things with scholarships and trying to help build some playgrounds and focusing on things that Sean really wanted to do. And I actually did meet Sean once, very briefly. It wasn't a long conversation. And he was a good kid. He just wanted to, pursue his dream as being a police officer.
Yeah, he was 27 years old, a police officer with MIT, and killed during by the bombers during the manhunt for them.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, he had, I think Cambridge Police had him ready to go. I think he got accepted into Cambridge Police Department. It was just waiting for the paperwork and processing, if I remember correctly. It's been a dozen years, so I'm trying to remember the details.
Yeah, it's a sad part of it for sure, and I'm glad that he's not forgotten, certainly.
Yeah, I saw his dad, well, stepdad, but really his dad. He's raised him since he was a baby, over the holidays. And we chit chat, and the family's managing. It's 12 years, it hurts, but they have purpose, and they never forget him.
Absolutely. So I'm assuming you're not running in the marathon, Jackie.
You ever seen me run anywhere?
Always calculated moves by Tacky, never running.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're lucky to see me do a slow crawl. I'm not exactly the most speedy person on the street, if you've noticed. I can sprint quick, but then again, I stop fast too. No, I don't do running. And also, I hate to admit to this, but even my knees are starting to go. I pick up a few years on the odometer. But no, I've known some people to run a marathon. It's a grind. And you've met people. I'm sure all of us that on this call has. Had people run the marathon or still running the marathon. Kudos to you. It is one of the most brutal, poorly paved, hilly, screwed up weather, inconsistent temperature, location marathon you're going to find.
Yep, and people come from all over the world to run in it because they love it.
They love it. And again, more kudos to you. I mean, absolutely. Because you can start at like 33 degrees, you can finish at 80. I mean, so, and you might see a little fog depending where you are on hop ticket. So it's a brutal marathon. I mean, you look at other marathons on television, and sometimes you click it on, but especially during the Olympics, every time you do some Olympics, you see a marathon no matter where they are. It's a flat surface.
Yes. Yeah. It's not, nothing like ancient Greece.
No, it's always like, I'm like, oh, you look at the New York Marathon, you see the cliffs, they're like running across the causeways, and I'm like, oh, that's flat.
Yeah, no Heartbreak Hill there.
Oh, yeah, there's no like ginormous potholes that's just going to magically appear.
It's a challenge to drive it, never mind run it.
Oh, that's exactly it. It's and again, there's no way the marathon could predict. Perhaps there's a road problem on any of this way that just happens because I don't know. It's been thawing and freezing nonstop for the last month. There's always the possibility that this weekend you might have a crack somewhere. I
Oh
mean,
yeah, it snowed last Saturday, so anything could happen, yeah.
exactly. This is New England, right? So, I mean, we all know here if you thaw and heat, you thaw and heat enough times, eventually the asphalt's going to give. And it is run on a road. It isn't like it's a causeway or a park or something like that. So, you know, the marathoners, you can't predict that perhaps, you know, Sunday night a new crack opens up that may not be, you know, stop traffic, but you could trip and fall.
Yep, there's definitely risks to it for sure. Yeah.
Well, this is exactly it. That's why this marathon is kind of brutal. It's not just the weather, it's not just the hills. It's just that you don't know what the road conditions are because there's no way you can get DPW out there, you know, the morning of the marathon, patch some cracks.
Right. No, exactly. So good luck to them, and we respect them all for sure.
Yeah, and also the people who cheered them on, and also people who do the water and the EMTs and the security. And you know everyone that you know, makes this marathon happen.
So we are in budget season, right? This week, actually.
Yeah, tomorrow's Wednesday the 16th, noontime. The House Committee on Ways and Means will vote to release their budget recommendation from committee. Amendments will be due on Friday. I've had my meetings with Ways and Means. Aaron Michaelis is the chair from North End, and you know did my. One of the Asian caucus, one of myself. And, you know, we're being very cautious here. About 16, give or take $1 billion of money is federally supported. So that, you know, includes Medicare, which is, you know, MassHealth, reimbursements for the employees in those agencies. Unemployment agency is also a federal program. So, you know, ETA, Department of Transitional Assistance, a lot of federal employees there. The state employees, sorry, but federal funded. So they're not really federal employees. They're state funded federal employees. I'm sorry, state employees federally funded. Sorry, backwards. I mean, there's a bunch of these all over the place. And then, you know, people don't realize that like MBTA, you know, a big chunk of their budget is also from the federal government. We receive national federal highway money. That's part of our regular capital projects and road work. It's straight up cash from the feds as part of being part of the federal interstate program. When you're part of the federal interstate program, you get federal money for maintenance and capital improvements. You know, a lot of environmental stuff, you know, also tied to the feds too. So, you know, as I wrote in my House Nick Bullen, the federal government is becoming a very unreliable partner. And this is extremely concerning because there's no way we're going to fill any kind of major Medicaid reform in terms of like reduction of services or reduction of cost. And sure, we have a rainy day fund of $8 billion. We have like little trust funds with like the casino stuff, and you know, we have little settlement funds. We have all kinds of small trust funds all over the place, state dedicated specific purposes, and we can raid some funds, but none of those funds can, you know, cover a gap of, let's say, a 25% or even 20% reduction in Medicare funding from the federal government. There's no way we can sustain it. We can put like band-aids on things in the short term. Every time there's economic recession in the budget, we grab from rainy day fund or some other trust fund and start putting band-aids on. We're like, okay, we just have to get through one budget cycle. Then we kind of figure out what to do next and normalize. Once we normalize funding, we can start figuring out how to move forward. And that's the natural course of budgets. You've been around, you know, the saving and loan recessions. You've been around the dot-com bust, financial crisis, COVID. I mean, you know, governments, you know, state governments, no different because they have to have a balanced budget from anybody else. It's just that, and they have to kind of ride out the storms and have enough rainy day fund to patch the holes to get through the storms. But if the federal government is serious about major Medicare reforms, it means reduction of spending on their side. There's really no way for us to permanently fill in the gap, and no one wants to pay taxes. So yeah, that could be a problem. And you know, Medicare, MassHealth, Medicaid is about 28 to 31% of the budget, depending on the year's revenue and how you calculate the budget. And local aid's the other 18 to 20%, again, depending on how you calculate the budget. State budget, almost half gone. And discretionary funding the budget's about 30%.
Yeah,
Does
so
it feel
it'll
like?
leave you a lot of leeway.
Yeah, because the other 20-ish percent that's non-discretionary is like paying our debt, the
Yeah.
bond, prisons, UMass, judiciary systems, pension liability, MBTA, school building assistance. There's a lot of things that are really fixed costs in the end, whether by state law or by, I don't know, not ticking off Wall Street bondholders.
Right.
So,
Or contracts too, right, with the unions.
and we have to honor our contracts and pay like utility bills. Utility bills are fixed costs, like just like you guys in the business are living, in your home, your utility bill, which we can talk about energy later. We pay water, pay sewer, we pay energy. But we don't pay taxes to municipalities because we don't tax the higher up in government during the Constitution. But we do pay payment in lieu of taxes depending on certain situations. And certain things, we have to upkeep, like the MBTA, police academy is paid by the T, but we also have the state police academy, which is paid by the state, right? Cutting that's gonna be a problem. So, some stuff that you conceive as like a fixed cost, but really isn't, because you cannot not have it. Like we're going to reduce the state trooper troops, number of state troopers by 50%. I mean, we're having problems hiring state troopers still. We have a workforce shortage.
Right.
So, some people think, oh, you can cut here, cut there. Well, I mean, it's a consequence too. And just like in Congress, you cut certain things, it affects someone else in someone else's district, which becomes a real struggle because, just because we live in Quincy and this certain agency doesn't really mean to us in our little world, doesn't mean it doesn't matter to like 15 towns in Central Mass.
Yeah,
They're gonna let us know it matters. It becomes a real balancing
how
act
do
of
you
how to
plan
fund.
for an unknown? I mean, if you don't know, how do you plan?
You don't. You just pivot.
Yeah.
I mean, this is always a job I tell folks, is constantly readjusting priorities, endlessly readjusting priorities, and also trying to focus on like 40 things at the same time. All you can do is make sure that you put money in the rainy day fund and save. It's a very popular mantra out there that we should give all the money back from the rainy day fund back to taxpayers. Okay, that's fair. I get it. But if we end up with a $2 billion shortfall one year and there's no rainy day fund, what's our alternative?
Right. Yeah, it's like giving away your personal emergency fund and then, you have to make a major repair to your house.
Well, I'm a little young for this, but I mean, the end of the Massachusetts miracle in the 80s, it resulted in the legislature forcing to vote for an income tax increase to 6.95% because of the recession. I'm a little young for that. I would think I was in high school when that happened. But, people that are old enough that were paying taxes at the time never forgot that. Right? When you go from 5% to a one time 6.95, and then I believe 6.25. And that cover that massive recessionary budget gap, and a lot of people lost their seats. That's when they purged, or people left 54 reps, and I think 54 reps, and I think I'm trying to remember. I think it's like 20 senators. I can't remember.
Wow.
I don't remember the senator number very well. Someone else will probably email you the correct number. But yeah,
It
I
was a
mean.
clean house, basically.
Yeah, that was the 1990 election, after the income tax problem. So that was kind of how that worked out there.
I know the speaker has said this year, no new taxes on residents or businesses.
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit earlier too when the governor proposed the sugar tax, this farmer tax, which for the love of Pete, I looked at it. I don't actually understand where they're trying to go with this thing. With living in inflationary times, and it's spent, making you spend more isn't going to help anybody. And the speakers, in ways and means, has got to be confident enough that the $8 billion rainy day fund will be able to address any bumps in the road. We're crossing our fingers at this point, gambling that the federal government is not going to do anything to us. And people always want to create public policy that's anticipatory of the future. as opposed to reactionary. But I always say over and over again that when lawmakers try to anticipate the future and pass a law anticipating the future, we always get it wrong.
You're not good fortune tellers.
Hideous fortune tellers. You don't want fortune telling by collective, much less
Right.
fortune telling by one person. So, this is something I ran across many times in my, career in the legislature, as well as politics in general. Everyone's like, oh, what if, what if? Let's do the following laws. I'm like, what if? Well, what is, right? So, speaker's position and ways and means position, and obviously not the House's position, is that we'll wait and see what comes up with the Fed level, and we'll take it as it comes on what happens next. And we're relying on our federal delegation. I know Democrats are the minority, but relying on the federal delegation to do their best on trying to figure out how to leverage their position, the minority, to be able to do what's best for not just us, but all the states they represent. And remember, just in Congress in particular, states are not purely, rarely purely all Democrat or all Republican. Many states in this country have a mix of Democrat and Republican Congress people. Massachusetts is an outlier, not the norm, regarding an all Democratic delegation. So, you got that kind of interesting, factor at home of the Tip O'Neill, right? I mean, all politics is home, but when you have members of both political parties in your state in Congress, all politics at home becomes pretty different of how you want to view the matter, because
Right.
congressional districts plus they got the senators, right? And even the tariff issue, right? The tariff issue, senator spoke up first. You're still pretty quiet in Congress overall on the House side. Not a whole lot of bluster. So it's again different dynamics associated with them, but it doesn't mean that people in Congress are quiet. I mean, the appropriations chair of the House had lost his Social Security office and his Native American service office, and he made a call to DOGE. And said, "Hey, I'm the appropriation chair, and you just killed two of my offices. One, that is a Social Security office, and one is like crucial for Native American services, and they're a big part of my constituency." And shortly after, those offices were taking off the DOGE list and were reopened. So,
Yeah, that's a big whoops.
politics as its best, right, guys? That's what Congress people do. Like myself, we try to do our best to protect the interests of our constituency. So, I mean, I continue to rely on the fact that all elected officials still have to do, all politics is local, and respond best to how the president and Elon Musk and any of those guys down in the executive branch do things, because once it starts to affect home, you can't just sit there and just take it. And we've dealt with corporate governors here too. People forget we have Mitt Romney, Deval Patrick, and Charlie Baker, three individuals who've actually never served really in politics. Charlie Baker was a selectman, but never really served in a legislative service level or were like a mayor, executive branch, larger community type politics. And I'll tell you guys right up front. I mean, they all treated like it was corporations, slaves, board of directors, and you just do what we want because that's how it goes. But board of directors are selected by shareholders, and it's based on number of shares you have as a weight on your vote. But often the CEO and the chair of the board picks the board. Not for profits often happen the same way too. You have the chair of the board or the creation of a nominating committee on the board who picks the next board. And they have the executive director or the president or CEO weigh in on how it's going to play out. So that's not how it works, in a strong legislature like Congress and like ourselves, where we can affect your budget, dictate terms in terms of changing laws, so forth and so forth. So it's whether or not Congress or a legislature wants to exercise their power to bring balance against the executive branch. Well, that's up to them.
It's going to be a wait and see game, but in the meantime, what is the process on Beacon Hill?
Amendments due on Friday, then we'll probably have 1,200 to 1,400 amendments. And then we'll proceed to have Ways and Means sort and go through all the amendments over the weekend. And they'll start trying to analyze and break them down. Let's not be shy about this. There'll be yes and no and maybe piles being formed. And then we'll most likely start debate at some time on the 28th of April, that Monday. And then we'll start the process of debating more controversial items first. Historically, that's what we've always done. We take the hard stuff for debate up first. And then we all lobby, for lack of a better term, Ways and Means Chair to get our amendments accepted. And it's a whole week of Ways and Means listening to us, asking for them and trying to justify our amendments.
It really is down to brass tacks when you get into it. It's a lot of interpersonal relationships, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I know the advocate's going to go talk, go advocate in the mini caucuses, which is in these kind of subject matter, smaller room conversations. We have like 50, 60 reps in a room talking to the Ways and Means Chair, each one advocating individually for the individual amendments. But the reality is that a lot of the groundwork's done long before the budget begins. The advocates have already advocated. We bring a lot of advocate stuff to the Ways and Means Chairs prior to the budget being released, even. So it isn't like they haven't seen it before. It's new stuff that they've not seen before. Obviously, it's like, what is this, right? The advocates came and saw us in March. We know what this is. This is an amendment. We don't know what it is. Why are you doing this, right? That's kind of the big difference here, where advocates kind of like think that more advocacy during the Ways and Means process is going to create a better result. Well, they've already spent 2 months advocating before, including legislators having on the way into the budget. What more can you say? And this is kind of I find fascinating in my lifetime in this place in terms of watching it all, is that people think that it's just that easy. It's like, oh,
If you talk enough, it'll just magically happen.
yeah, it's really interesting how people really believe that. It really does. So,
Anything specific to Quincy that you're advocating for?
no, we'll be doing our earmarks historically, like we've done in the past with various service agencies and city government needs. Not sure how it's going to play out still. Like I said, Ways and Means have been very close to the vest regarding revenues and how much money they really have available in terms of some loose discretionary money, so to speak.
Well, they should know today. It's tax day.
We won't know actually because the budget will be done for us before the numbers released in April because they come out in May. The
Oh,
House,
okay.
the Senate will know the number before we do. So we're kind of a little bit in the dark here. About 65%, give or take, of our revenue comes in today. And that's kind of the tricky thing about forming a budget, is the fact that you don't actually have a better projection number. And again, there's no guarantee. Like I said last week regarding the millionaire's tax, just because we had a surplus of $1.3 billion on that surcharge, a millionaire's tax, doesn't mean it's going to happen again. A lot of things could happen. People move, people die, people lose their jobs, people get wiped out on Wall Street. That probably had happened.
It could be fewer millionaires. That's true.
I mean, a lot of things could have happened, right? So, I mean, people who do analysis on tax revenue in particular kind of have to try to factor these unknowables in there to create a projection. The position that we've always taken in the House is to take the most conservative number possible, or at least the lower end of the positive, to try to hedge our bets. And sometimes we come out ahead, and sometimes we don't. But I've never seen us ever taking the most optimistic number.
No, because you don't know, so you have to stay conservative until you know.
Exactly it. I've in my lifetime of watching this, and like I said, I've been watching budgets since 95, 96. I've never seen us ever take the most optimistic on it.
All right. Well, we'll be talking about this in the weeks and months to come, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, next, conversation Scoop Vacation Week. There's not a lot talking about that week, and then you're probably going to get me in the middle of budget debate, or probably before debate starts at the end of April. And then obviously the Senate will kick off their budget about 2 weeks into May, and then their budget debate is always the week of more the weekend. So, say you hold the weekend hostage against the senators. So, but I mean, it's also more efficient, right? I mean, I was reminding some younger reps, I'm old enough to do it on paper with photocopies, stapled, correlated. People need to sign on the day before it actually goes to the clerk. You can send on to an amendment after when it's the clerk's office. Electronic filing. In some cases, we had a typewriter certain things because the way the formatting came up.
Wow.
It was very different time. And you only had three photocopiers sent it. The house had more, but not that many. So you're waiting in line to get next to the photocopy.
Oh, the good old days.
Oh yeah, it was different. And at one point I filed something like 30 odd amendments plus, for Michael Morrissey. And that's not a lot of work because they had to make five copies, they have their extra copies, they had to write the fact sheets, then you had people coming in to try to co-sponsor, so you had the co-sponsor sheets ready to go, make sure those co-sponsor sheets are properly copied and correlated. I mean, it's a lot of paperwork. Nowadays you cut and paste. You put into the laws system, which is what we call electronic system, you hit the submit button.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely different world today for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, very different from when I first started. So I always tell people, it's like, every newly elected has the same thing. I only have 2 days. I'm like, yeah, so I had 2 days too 30 years ago when I had to like get paper cuts all the time. So
That's right.
I don't know what
So
you're complaining about.
get cracking. No excuses.
Oh yeah, there's something you said about working with your hands. I really believe that. Even if it's like that kind of office work, I mean, it makes a greater appreciation about the level of effort you put in, and the results you get, whether it be positive or negative. Nowadays it's same amount of time, but much less difficult, believe it or not, because it's electronic. You can do a word search on the website or a PDF. I had to open a book and scramble through 200 pages
Right.
to
And you
find
gotta know which book to go to first, yeah.
exactly. And then it was very different. Scrambling for your amendments, just flipping pages, trying to find the right words. And then it comes to the drafting itself. And then we had to learn how to draft from Senate counsel over there. And they gave us advice of how to do it. And then, you had to type it up and all that stuff. And, computers back then were mostly glorified word processors.
Pretty
So,
much, yeah.
again, it's different today. Today, you can cut and paste right out of a PDF. Back then, you had to type the whole thing all over again.
Have you had a chance to review the Beddoes bill, Tacky? I know Senator Kenan's advocating for regulating online gambling.
Yeah, I've not looked at it yet. This is something that John's advocated for, especially regarding the advertising point,
Yes.
and he's taking on a gambling addiction as one of his major causes. I'm very supportive of both these programs, and while I'm not against people who want to gamble, I think sometimes people need positive reinforcement that it's okay to stop. There's help out there for people who are trying to stop. Because it does lead to detrimental issues in your life, if you find yourself in a addiction situation. And sometimes you won't even know your addiction. As I learned from any type of addiction, until you hit a certain circumstance in your life where you realize that this life's gone really sideways and heading down, that you come to the realization that you have a problem and needs to be addressed. And Massachusetts is a state that puts quite a bit of investment into, Masters of Compulsive Gaming. DPH, I've been working with the last couple of years on getting better data sets from the casinos because they've had some trouble doing it. And Mass Gaming Commission is where the data sets end up, so you can get better ideas of demographics and how it works. And you all see your advertising, whether it be on YouTube or TV commercials or any number of social influencers. Regarding gambling, and now it's inescapable with your phones, and we have more gambling accessibility for any time in our history where you're literally sitting in the privacy of your home and in your phone, and you can just make a bet, whether it be actually you could do it on the tee, you could do it at lunch, you could do it anywhere, right?
Right.
So, there's also kind of like the hook, right? John's very concerned about, get back, so-called get back money back for losing bets, right? What does that really mean? What does the fine print look like? We've also had problems with DPH in the sense that, separate from Chan, but regarding those hotline numbers in the bottom, people mistakenly think that's actually a gambling assistance hotline to help them gamble,
Oh,
not,
really?
yeah, and not actually getting assistance on gambling problems.
Oh.
And, the lack of clarity is creating some confusion and grief for DPH in particular, who's trying to have people who need help, as opposed to who try to can't use their app correctly.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Huh.
So it's not like people don't see the number, they just don't know what the number's for.
I guess that's an indicator you may have a problem.
John's correct in certain areas, right? And actually, how the gambling industry portrays itself to you as a consumer and whether they're fully disclosing everything that they are providing accurately, and whether or not they're doing advertising practices that creates not just initial addiction, but also false impressions regarding of like your cash back, right? You have to actually re-gamble. That's actually a credit. You don't actually get your money back, but they don't explain that.
Okay. So yeah, some disclosure transparency issues there for sure. If you just get a credit, that's just going to encourage you to gamble again.
Yeah, the Gaming Commission, if I remember correctly, last cycle, had reopened it, looking at advertising. We can't necessarily ban all advertising, but we can put limits on advertising if it's deemed sufficient to affect public health.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. So it seems like it still needs to be worked through the process.
Well, we were talking something that's now reactionary. We talked about this before, right? How could we have anticipated app-based gambling even 5 years ago, probably,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
We've seen web-based casino-type gambling. Many of them were in a place like Antigua, where there's a jurisdiction. That's not new. That's been going a while, but it was not exactly like, how to put this, it's not like it's such a huge negative impact on us as a state because, well, yeah, people do do it. It's different when you do something, that is illegal versus something that is legal.
Right.
People will tend to gravitate towards legal vices versus illegal vices when the opportunity arises.
Right. Yeah. Of course, that's the argument from the industry is that there is this, kind of black market available that will just force people to use that more.
Well, also it creates data sets now. Now we know how to address puzzle gaming and we know how to find the folks because it's always been there. It's just that it's visible because there's no way for us to better identify. So
Right.
what
Yeah.
could be the double-edged sword, right? On the one front, we're encouraging something that may cause a negative impact in your lives and affect public health. On the other side, now you're not invisible.
Right. That was the argument when marijuana was legalized, right? That would it push people to use drug dealers more. That we didn't see that. We saw the industry explode.
We did, but they also had a price problem because the industry's explosion wasn't sufficient to cause the prices of the product to go down sufficiently that it actually offsets the black market.
Right.
And that continues to be a real concern regarding recreational marijuana. Putting aside my concerns about the product, I prefer a safe product, I prefer a product that's trackable to its origin. I prefer a product that's been tested multiple times in terms of safety and health. People can use it, but there's a price associated with safety. A higher product cost. The black market is still going to exist until those products reach a price level where the black market cannot sustain against it. It's like racketeering and bookies, right? Once the lottery came into place, the number of games started vanishing illegally. Same thing when horse betting was legalized. But then again, we'll talk about a time you didn't have phone betting too, so you could still bet on the street and horses. But now that we have casino gaming and online gaming, underground basement casinos are pretty much going away. I mean, I'm not saying they don't exist, but they become less attractive. You can actually practice or entertain yourself or engage in a type of vice where it's legal, regulated, and overseen.
Yeah, we're seeing, I mean, the market's been saturated, so prices for recreational marijuana are coming down for sure.
Yeah, and that's what needs to happen to kill the black market off.
Yeah.
There's always going to be some. And those that you watch the news, some very unscrupulous folks, lace the marijuana fentanyl.
Yep, which can be deadly.
Exactly. And that's why, while it's a higher cost, at least you know what the product you're getting. And if someone dies from a cannabis shock, we have the local health boards, we have the State Cannabis Commission put aside some of the problems they're having. You have the state police, you always have the legislature. I mean, everybody will jump all over that business that if there's some incident that causes somebody to get ill. Same thing we do with alcohol. We got people under serving or intoxication, or there's like some kind of violence, the local licensing boards will intervene, regarding their liquor license, right? In terms of, the fact that giving this higher responsibility to make money off a very limited availability license, and you misuse it, well, you're going to lose it.
You mentioned earlier energy. We should talk a little bit about that. I know that the speaker mentioned last week that part of his priority for the next year's budget will be energy affordability.
Yeah, this is a little bit tricky because in Massachusetts, we talk about it as a deregulated state. And if you so care to look at competitive supply, you can find them online. It isn't difficult. Then you can choose your price. And the price will most likely be lower than the basic rate. So for those of you who are not on municipal aggregation in Quincy, because this is a municipal aggregation state, and I mean city, you're actually getting not a bad price in energy. However, we On average, I'm sorry, let me put it this way. On average, over 2.5 years is probably a good price of energy on the average. But for example, lately, WTI and crude has been floating at the $60 oil, which oddly enough, I've not seen the price change at the gas pump. At that price drop, we should have lost 10 cents per gallon already, which I'm very
I
surprised.
noticed the same thing. Funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, I'm very surprised. It's an indication that the refiners and the gas industry is very, very afraid of a spike, and they're not going to be able to respond to a spike quickly. And energy prices, supply and demand, and also influenced by third parties flooding the market of more natural oil and natural gas, which the Saudis actually are doing now. They're flooding the market with oil, which actually adversely affects all businesses in that industry because it drives prices down. And the fear of any kind of economic recession means less energy consumption. And recession is a global thing now. It's no longer just like one country. So it's always regional or global. So that drives down the price of energy too. So, for the municipal aggregation, for a competitive supply, there's a chance that you're probably losing money against the current market rate. But by wintertime, when it gets colder, energy prices tend to spike 25%. Now, municipal aggregation and competitive supply will probably give you a steady rate, and now you're beating the energy market. This is, as you guys can tell, I spend enough time watching energy markets and how this works. So it's again, it's an average, not a spot. And if you try to do spot energy purchases, good luck to you. That's like playing roulette.
It's like day trading in the market,
So, competitive supply, actually better access to competitive supply that, is honest and upright about how it works, you're now playing against the potential average of a certain number of years against the energy market that in the long term, then it's going to work out. So if you're not on a municipal aggregation like in Quincy, if you're, or you're denied to do that because you own competitive supply, or you choose not to, you're still on the national grid utility basic rate, which they adjust every 6 months. Now we're moving into a cycle where they're doing the adjustment, and they do the spot adjustment on the day of, which right now energy markets are very low, but it's only good for 6 months. So there's a likelihood that basic energy cost of the base rate underneath utilities may actually be lower than competitive market rate for that set of contract last, let's say, summertime. It may be a little lower than the municipal aggregate, but it's also for 6 months. So perhaps come October, a 30% spike on the spot when a utility company makes their bids and checking the markets and make that spot, and then that could be 30% higher later. It's unpredictable in that sense. When the economies are hot, like everything's humming along, energy markets tend to be a little bit more stable. There's economy is good. There's economic business. The price is going to go up, and you can kind of like work towards the price increases. When the economy is going to drop like a rock, and as you all know, no one knows what's happening anymore globally, economically speaking. it has a huge fluctuation in consumption on a global level,
There's a
and
lot of uncertainty, right? Yeah.
a lot of uncertainty, which then can affect energy prices going down. Now, the second half of your bill that you've all heard in news more often about is your transmission and distribution rates. Transmission are the giant wires or the giant pipes that bring energy to Massachusetts. Small wires and the small pipes are the ones that go into your homes. Small wires and small pipes and the small wires are the ones that are run by the utility company, National Grid and Eversource. And some other parts like Liberty runs natural gas in Fall River and a few other natural gas distributors. The big energy is also run by the local utility, but there are separate rates set by the federal government, not by the state transmission rates. However, the state government can put more charges on your distribution rate that you pick up the costs on various local projects. My common one that I spent time fighting was the solar energy credit, which class one's been phased out in part, and it's going to be readjusted again, where your solar energy panels your neighbor might have is being paid by your electric bill because they get a credit to purchase that, basically a tax credit. Or a company buys that credit and leverage it to in the private market to sell said credits so they can run and open their businesses. So you can leverage credits in the open market, derivative trading. So got this factor there that's in there. And the hope has always been renewable energy credits will go down, solar credits will go down over time. Renewable energy credits did go down. It was 65 cents a kilowatt 30 years ago. No, that's 25 years ago because it went to effect in 2001. So about almost 25 years now. But it's now 5 cents per kilowatt hour. Massive decline from 25 years ago. But solar credits did not because of lack of competition, and that's a bit of a problem, right? We talk about energy efficiency programs. That's part of your distribution charge too. There's a blank check component to that, which was never really paid attention by DPU for since 2009, and now it's come home to roost. I had warned the signal way back when that Green Communities bill was being put together, when I was still working in the AG's office, that this is going to go crazy, and it did. So I think it's really a question when we talk about energy, you have to be very knowledgeable of the fact that you have multiple components. You have transmission, which you have little control over. We have distribution, which you have control over the extra charges we have put on, not may have, we have put on as a legislature over the course of many, many, many decades. And then you have the energy price itself, which is a combination of open market, municipal aggregation, and the utility-based rate. And believe it or not, I mean, we have some great people in the state house that work on this. Jeff Roy, the floor leader, was telecom utilities chair for 3 terms. But he knows the stuff inside and out. Mark Cusack now, the chair of the committee from Braintree, he's getting up to speed. Mark is a bright guy who figured this out. Obviously, yeah, me. I've been in this energy stuff, watching it for since like forever, it feels like. And working both the big policy issues as well as the laws of physics and how rates are made when I was in the AG's office. And trust me, a lot of people challenged me on the energy launch. And I'm surprised how many people basically didn't remember high school physics.
Interesting.
Just say, electricity sits in the wire, it creates heat. The goal is to create alloys, metals that reduce heat. You reduce heat, reduce line loss, more energy can get to your home, and it actually reduce the cost. Basic physics. Same thing with natural gas. If the natural gas doesn't have sufficient pressure to get down the line, as people keep drawing off that line, the person, as you get close to the end of the line, has the natural gas. Simple. Same thing as water. I mean, this is just physics, folks. It's not hard. But people get caught up on fact sheets and things like that from various advocacy groups. And, I don't think it's that difficult. Go to, sign up for Bryant.
Or not.
I shouldn't promote private companies that do
Right,
education.
yeah.
But, again, I'm just always like, I just don't think it's that hard. But again, I've also been, neck high in this stuff for most of my adult life.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, the whole offshore wind technology now is in limbo too, because of the federal government.
Yeah, the federal government is looking to revoke the leases that are in the deep water. And it's going to be a bit of an interesting question because the administration has basically stopped new deep water leases. However, to be honest with you, there isn't a whole lot of deep water on the East Coast that is eligible for big wind because you need big wind to be perfect, and it involves air currents, water currents. There's a whole lot of science involved regarding weather science. And weather science is not 100% accurate. So you're looking at the highest percentages based on weather science to gather the big wind you need, which happens to be one of the locations is off the coast of Rhode Island. And we'll see how that plays out because the contracts have been signed with us. I know there was a whole interim issue regarding inflationary costs for them, and it was going to be a loss, because they can't get the return on equity because of the fact that the loans are not paced with inflation properly. Again, there's a whole capital financing problem, right? Created by high interest rates and inflation. But you know, the contracts are inked in Massachusetts, and they got to deliver. But if the feds start revoking leases, it's a problem. Same thing to our neighbors to the north, right? We finally got this huge settlement, which is going to be part of your distribution cost, or which is going to be a problem again. But that we had to do in Maine to get the transmission line built to Maine, and Massachusetts customers have to pick up the cost. But we don't have that. A, we're going to be short of energy. Okay, one, we're going to be short, so we need it. And two, you know, it's clean power from hydro. However, with the current relations of our friends to the north, who don't think we're friends anymore,
Yeah,
there's nothing.
at least for the short term.
Yeah, there's nothing for stopping them to violate contracts and just basically cut us off, and we dare sue them, or they create additional surcharges that drives up your energy price at at your bottom line at home. Yes, it does matter, these relationships between us and other countries, particularly when we're cross-trading countries. I mean, Maine is going to get smacked hard because they're a huge lumber state that actually trades heavily with Canada. They have a huge agricultural trade with Canada, and the tariffs and the declining relationship has massive impacts for a state like Maine. All the big malls and shopping plazas along the border of Canada has gone barren. People are not doing cross-border travel. The harder it is for them to get over the line to go to a shopping plaza means they're not coming to said shopping. Niagara Falls has seen no bookings from the Canadian side. People are not visiting, nor foreign visitors are coming for honeymoons. I mean, you know, and domestic market would not make it up. It's just not enough domestic market to make up the difference. Particularly, like, you know, are you know, from like 4,000 miles away or whatever? I don't know. We'll pick a random part of the country. We always use Oklahoma because it's the middle part of the country. Anyway, if you're, you know, good Oklahoma and, you know, supporting the president's position, are you going to go drive up to New York border to help a mall that's devastated by this relationship degradation?
No, certainly not. Of course not. Yeah.
Yeah, again, you know, it's like all politics are local, and, you know, we can all help each other out. But I mean, there's a practicality to it, right? It's very impractical, right, what I just said. And, you know, and that's secondly, why would someone from Oklahoma care what happens in the border of New York regarding a massive economic decline that
Right.
kills a little town as easily as it kills a town that loses a factory?
Yeah, no, they won't. It's going to stay in their own community, right?
Yeah, all politics are local. But, you know, if you really want to expand your horizons and think big, you know, you got to look more into other places around the country and also around the world and kind of get a sense of how we're all tied or not tied together, you know, economically, militarily, socially, culturally. I mean, all these different things. I mean, I always say U.S. is still the biggest cultural export in the world between, you know, things like movies, music, the NBA, most popular game on the planet. You know, it's a big deal. And I think, you know, some things we take for granted, and we live in our little world, you don't realize how important it is elsewhere. You miss out on some of these observations and how we're more alike than different in certain ways. In certain ways. But it's those certain commonalities that ties us together.
I just looked at the clock, Jackie. Where'd the hour go?
Me rambling on for 1 hour. I didn't get enough cracks in against you this time. I normally throw a couple of zingers at you, but clearly I was pretty fascinated by my sound of my voice this time, I suspect.
That's all right. There'll be plenty of time for that later.
Well, you want to see something that's important to Massachusetts? Watch the Canadian elections coming up at the end of the month. what happens in Parliament and the choice of the next prime minister by the dominant party, which looks like it's going to be the Liberal Party for now. I mean, things can happen in elections. It's going to be important how they engage in relationships with DC. Also, provincial elections, as you all discovered, the provincial governors have enormous power regarding how to do their own trade relations. And well, I don't there are no I don't think there's any provincial elections coming up. The provincial governor Ford of Ontario has not been shy making the news waves about what he thinks, and and they actually can impact things like trade too, in terms of energy, in terms of cross borders, in terms of government contracts, which they canceled a lot of U.S. company government contracts. And imagine the world starts canceling U.S. corporate contracts because they're just ticked off of us, and they can find a domestic replacement, right? So these elections this year, and last year was easily the largest number of democracies having elections last year, and it was a massive anti-incumbency, by the way, not just in this country but also in other countries. We'll see how it all plays out, and if you want to broaden your horizon a little bit, watch the Canadian elections coming up at the end of the month.
Will do. It's easy to do now, given technology today, that's for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can listen to both political parties, prime ministers, stumping for the political parties, or I'm sorry, prime minister candidates. Although Mark Carney is the sitting prime minister because they don't break the government, they don't destroy the government in during election time. It's not like England where the government basically dissolves during an election and never cares.
Right. They start all over again.
Yeah, the Canadians are wise enough not to dissolve the government. They still have a government during the elections.
That's
They're okay.
right.
So, but yeah, again, I mean, if you like to, doesn't hurt to, read a couple articles what's going on north of the border.
Absolutely. How do we get a hold of you?
Well, it's gonna be a busy week for me. 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the number. We're still in room 42 of the State House, down in the basement on the so-called New Side, built in 1899. So we're there, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I'm getting a lot of email now. People are advocating for their budget requests. You can see us in state. Representative Tacky Chan, we had our first public hearing yesterday, our test run hearing, like I talked about last week. You can see pictures of me being official. That's the best way to look at it. You have at Tacky Chan on X, as well as tackychan.org for our contact page and resource page. You have malegislature.gov. Again, you can watch the hearings. If you missed it live, you get the recordings. And you can make your own account on malegislature.gov to track bills and things that is important to you. Of course, we hear of QATV every week or 2 weeks ago. And we got Joe in the morning as well, who gives you a 10-minute rundown of what's happening in the city. Plus, obviously, reach out to Joe with questions and things you want to talk about. And Joe will review them and see which ones are appropriate for the audience. If you want to yell at Joe, be my guest. If you're not happy with me, you express your anger at Joe, save me some grief, and he can just throw me off the air. So that's always an option for you guys to do.
Would never do that,
And we're inside our 5-year anniversary together.
That's true. Yeah, it's all started during the pandemic and has continued ever since.
Yep. So it's been a good journey, and we'll see how many more years we got left in the two of
I think you have many more than I do.
Also, wish everybody a happy Passover this past weekend, and happy Easter coming up, and obviously wish everybody a safe Patriots Day and school vacation week. So I hope everybody is able to take a bit of time off for your families, and enjoy this weekend into next week.
Sounds good. All right. We'll catch up with you next week, Tacky. Thank you.
Oh, take care.